normal. Los datos recientes de la OIT, basados en estudios nacionales o censos en 117 países, cifran en cerca de 53 millones la cantidad de trabajadores domésticos. Sin embargo, tomando en cuenta que este tipo de empleo con frecuencia no se declara, los expertos consideran que el número total podría llegar a los 100 millones. Uruguay fue el primer país que ratificó el tratado en junio de 2012. Jorge Millares, Nueva York.
En Estados Unidos, el Partido Demócrata continúa con su convención en la ciudad de Charlotte, en Carolina del Norte, sin ocultar su intención de obtener el apoyo clave de grupos minoritarios para la reelección del presidente Barack Obama. Aiza García tiene más detalles.
La convención más diversa de su historia, eso quieren lograr aquí en Charlotte los demócratas, cuyos seguidores contribuyen a sufragar la campaña con la que el presidente Barack Obama busca una segunda oportunidad en la Casa Blanca.
Lo mejor de comprar aquí es que el dinero se va a la campaña del presidente Obama. Creo en él, tenemos los mismos ideales y es un líder que nos sabrá guiar por el buen camino.
Pero la convención abrió sus puertas con patrocinio de las grandes corporaciones, alta presencia mediática y bajo un fuerte operativo de seguridad. Unas 15.000 personas, entre ellas delegados, políticos, funcionarios y representantes de base, acudieron a escuchar el discurso más esperado de la noche.
Tenemos que trabajar como jamás lo hemos hecho. Una vez más, tenemos que juntarnos y mantenernos unidos para apoyar al hombre que podemos confiar para que haga avanzar este gran país. Mi esposo, nuestro presidente, presidente Barack Obama.
Demócratas o no, muchos se sintieron identificados con la primera dama.
Me sentí muy orgullosa de ella. Como mujer afroamericana, sentí mucha emoción. Ella tiene muchos atributos. Bueno, toda su familia es excelente.
Fue un mensaje muy emotivo. Muy sincero, yo vi y sentí la intensidad y el alcance de sus palabras.
Y desde el podio del llamado Time Warner Cable, también se presentó el alcalde de San Antonio, Texas, Julián Castro, el primer hispano en ofrecer el discurso principal en una convención. Un discurso en el que atacó al candidato republicano.
Cuando se trata de respetar los derechos de las mujeres, Mitt Romney dice no. Cuando se trata de dejar que las personas se casen con la persona a quien ama, Mitt Romney dice no. Cuando se trata de expandir el acceso a un buen cuidado de la salud, Mitt Romney dice no.
Mientras aplausos y coros entusiastas de respaldo se repiten una y otra vez aquí, detrás del escenario de este costosísimo espectáculo, lo que muchos se preguntan es por qué a estas alturas el presidente Barack Obama aún no logra arrasar en las encuestas a su contrincante republicano. Aiza García, Charlotte, Carolina del Norte.
Este miércoles, el expresidente William Bill Clinton tomó el micrófono para decirle a la nación que el presidente Barack Obama no solo sabe más de cooperación con gente que no está de acuerdo con él, sino que el Partido Demócrata está por la inclusión de las minorías para construir una nación más fuerte. Esta semana el presidente colombiano Juan Manuel Santos sorprendió a muchos anunciando un acuerdo que llevará a la mesa de negociaciones a miembros de su gobierno y representantes de la guerrilla, las FARC. Este miércoles el primer mandatario explicó quién estará a la cabeza de la representación gubernamental.
La persona que va a estar a la cabeza de estas negociaciones va a ser el doctor Humberto de la Calle. Todo el país lo conoce, ex vicepresidente, ex ministro del Interior, una persona con una amplia trayectoria jurídica y política, jugó un papel fundamental, definitivo, en la nueva constitución que hoy nos rige, y creo que el país puede sentirse más que tranquilo con el doctor Humberto Lacalle como jefe negociador.
Las pláticas de paz están programadas para comenzar el mes próximo en Noruega y luego continuarse en Cuba, y tiene entre las fuerzas de apoyo a Chile y a Venezuela. El presidente venezolano, Hugo Chávez Frías.
Nos han pedido, después de la primera etapa, que seamos acompañantes del proceso, ambos sectores, el gobierno, la FARC, y junto al gobierno de Chile, ¿verdad? Y nosotros estamos dispuestos. Yo llamé a Santos, bueno, nos llamamos ahora con bastante frecuencia, agradeciéndole, y estamos totalmente a la orden. Cuando se requiera que yo personalmente asuma alguna tarea, estoy a la orden. Cuando sea necesario que siga interviniendo el canciller Nicolás o algún comisionado especial que yo pueda designar en los próximos días, no lo he designado, pero bueno, después del inicio de las mesas de conversaciones que anunciaron serán en Noruega.
Por su parte, el presidente de Colombia aseguró que las próximas pláticas de paz serán serias, dignas y realistas.
Pero creo que con este equipo el país puede sentirse más que tranquilo, un equipo con todos con amplísima experiencia y todos con un gran deseo de que esto salga adelante de una forma, como dije ayer, seria, una forma digna, una forma realista y una forma eficaz.
El reconocido escritor y analista político James Petras señala que las fuerzas beligerantes de Colombia ya en dos veces intentaron avanzar la paz, pero en ambas ocasiones los militares optaron por dar muerte a sus adversarios.
Sí, hay dos veces anteriormente. Primero en los años 80, el 84-88, cuando los beligerantes, los insurgentes y el gobierno empiezan a negociar y firmaron un acuerdo y de repente los guerrilleros empezaron a participar en elecciones, ganaron elecciones, pero el gobierno lanzó una ofensiva militar y mataron más de 5.000 de los militantes y terminaron el acuerdo y los sobrevivientes volvieron a la montaña. Lo mismo pasó en el año 99 a 2001. Los guerrilleros y los gobernantes entraron en negociación y de repente los militares atacaron el lugar del campamento guerrillero y tratan de capturar los negociadores. Entonces uno tiene que acercar esta nueva propuesta del presidente Santos con mucha cautela, porque por ejemplo ayer cuando anunció el comienzo de negociaciones lo hizo frente a los comandantes en jefe militares y policía, no era entre ciudadanos, mucho menos los movimientos populares y movimientos sociales. Debemos decir una cosa primero, es bienvenido el hecho que el gobierno reconoce que no puede destruir o eliminar los guerrilleros y por fin aceptan como legítimos beligerantes para negociar. Eso es positivo. Segundo, que aceptaran a negociar con asesores con alguna credibilidad entre los venezolanos, los chilenos, los noruegos y los cubanos. Eso sirve para por lo menos poner las cosas en un contexto más neutral. Pero también debemos reconocer que el marco político indica que el gobierno y los negociantes del FARC tienen algunos parámetros sobre los temas a discutir. Por ejemplo, no hay ninguna mención de toda la industria minera y enérgica, que está el gran motor del crecimiento y explotación del país. Yo creo, y tengo escrito algo sobre este tema, el principal motor económico en Colombia hoy día es petróleo, oro y otros minerales, y hay un enorme flujo de capitales extranjeras entrando al país para explotar estos recursos con muy bajos niveles de impuestos y muchas exoneraciones. El problema el gobierno tiene es los lugares de explotación minera es áreas muy conflictivas donde los guerrilleros tienen mucho respaldo y mucha capacidad. Y creo que el gobierno de Santos quiere arreglar paz donde los guerrilleros bajan las armas abandonan estas áreas y se integran el sistema electoral actual. Y para eso necesitan firmar un acuerdo de paz para que los gran capitales no sienten inseguros y no tienen altos riesgos, como ahora. Los guerrilleros han intervenido varias veces volando oleoductos y otras facilidades de los sectores involucrados. Si el gobierno consigue que los FARC firman un acuerdo y dejan abierto el sector minero, yo creo que el gobierno está dispuesto a firmar un acuerdo. Pero el costo de este acuerdo es sacrificar una fuente de riqueza que podría financiar una mejor distribución de ingresos, una reforma agraria y otras reformas que necesita Colombia. No hay que olvidar, en el último 10 años Colombia han alcanzado el primer lugar en los países andinos en relación con las desigualdades. La apertura minera han concentrado enorme riqueza en pocos manos. Y es uno de los problemas que tiene que ser un tema de discusión. Si van a tener paz, ¿va a ser un paz con justicia o un paz con el capital extranjero dominando el sector más dinámico de la economía?
Mientras que en Colombia se habla de poner fin al conflicto armado de más de 5 décadas, algunos describen el baño de sangre que padecen los mexicanos hoy día como una colombianización de su país. La Caravana por la Paz, integrada por familiares de asesinados o desaparecidos víctimas de la violencia en México, partió el martes de Chicago para continuar en Cleveland su recorrido por Estados Unidos, la misma que finalizará el 12 de septiembre en Washington. Uno de los caravanistas es Santo de la Cruz Carrillo, miembro de la comunidad indígena huichole. Él fue entrevistado por Norma Martínez.
Venimos varios y varias víctimas. Entre ellas vienen mujeres y hombres también, que les han desaparecido sus familiares. El tema central es eso, ¿no? Pero también venimos los pueblos. Venimos los pueblos, también somos víctimas de otra amenaza, quizás, ¿no? Existe ese tipo de amenaza en nuestras regiones, pero sin embargo, eso está en oculto, porque el gobierno, el Estado mexicano, no quiere hacer investigaciones en la región, en campo, ¿no? El despojo, la invasión a nuestro territorio, ¿no? Que todavía sigue esa problemática que hace más de 500 años sufrimos una invasión, pero sin embargo actualmente todavía sigue ¿no? propagándose en las regiones. Entonces quizás antes fueron los españoles, ahorita el sistema capitalismo, ¿no? Entonces nosotros venimos exigiendo eso, ¿no? Las injusticias que se viven como pueblos. Actualmente nosotros como pueblo wixárika estamos exigiendo el retiro, la cancelación de las concesiones mineras en uno de los lugares sagrados que se llama Wirikuta. Empresas canadienses que se quieren acaparar de los recursos y nosotros no estamos de acuerdo porque el Estado mexicano autoriza sin el consentimiento previo, libre, informado de los pueblos, y eso afecta mucho a nuestra forma, ¿no? Al tejido social, ¿no? Es un rompimiento. Entonces, también es un dolor fuertísimo porque pues ahí nacimos, ahí nos desarrollamos, ahí morimos, ¿no? Es nuestra madre tierra. Y hablar más de centros ceremoniales, de un lugar sagrado, pues es algo más fuerte para los guadalupanos, como la Villa de Guadalupe, o para los católicos del Vaticano, ¿no? Las musulmanes, las mezquitas. Para nosotros Wirikuta es eso, algo muy fuerte. Entonces, es un dolor, un remordimiento que nosotros también traemos. Hay una infinidad de problemáticas en este caminar del Movimiento por la Paz, Justicia y Dignidad. Estamos pues visibilizando, ¿no? Sin embargo, en parte se están enfatizando en algunas cosas, ¿no? Y bueno, ojalá que nos den más espacio en este caminar. Ahorita los medios obviamente pues dan más cara, quién dirige. Yo creo que los medios tienen que dar también, echar ojo cómo vienen representados, ¿no? Cuál es el dolor que traen todos los integrantes.
Las mineras han explotado, sabemos que han muerto muchos mexicanos, trabajadores mineros que les pagan un salario de miseria y que tienen que trabajar en condiciones muy terribles en las minas. Pero el tema de ustedes, que es la lucha por la soberanía indígena, la defensa de Wirikuta en este caso, ¿puedes explicarle más a la gente el significado que tiene, no solamente para ustedes como pueblo indígena, sino para los mexicanos y como patrimonio mundial?
Claro, por un lado comentarles que es un santuario, que es el centro ceremonial, nosotros le llamamos matriz de la vida, es donde se funda la esencia de la vida tal cual. Lo que está en juego aquí es la vida, por eso nosotros estamos exigiendo acabar con Wirikuta, pues es acabar las familias wixárika y está en peligro la tradición de todo un pueblo, que es el pueblo wixárika. Por ello, nosotros vamos a seguir luchando por todas las vías, por vía de legalidad, por vía de las acciones, y si se puede por la vía de cabildeo, que ahí no le estamos apostando mucho, porque el gobierno siempre trata de alguna forma de hacer actos mediáticos simplemente, y eso la verdad es que no garantiza para los pueblos. Entonces, esto lo comento porque el 24 de mayo el Estado mexicano anunció que ya había retirado todas las concesiones mineras de Wirikuta. Sin embargo, fue una farsa, una mentira, fue un engaño solamente para el pueblo Wixárika, la comunidad nacional e internacional, para hacer creer que todo el problema se acabó.
En su recorrido por más de 20 ciudades norteamericanas, los caravanistas buscan destacar las políticas fracasadas de los gobiernos de México y Estados Unidos, que han generado mayor violencia en el lado mexicano sin detener el flujo de drogas hacia los Estados Unidos. Durante la caravana también se denuncia el tráfico de armas provenientes de los Estados Unidos para armar a las bandas de narcotraficantes mexicanos y propone un debate sobre la despenalización del consumo de drogas. Y así concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de todas las personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez, director de este proyecto. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
Y gracias por su atención. Ahora es el programa en inglés. Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. And that's coming up for the next 2 hours. Welcome. My name is Robert Norris. Stay with me for a lot of street interviews, some interesting updates statewide, and some announcements about a protest coming up tomorrow at City Hall and around the town against the attacks on homeless people by police, rangers, vigilante groups, and those who want to drive poor people out of sight and perhaps out of town. So, stay tuned. And that was the Move Apart Parcel from a street group that I wandered by, gosh, sometime in the last month. Rin Tin Tiger is the group, and it's Toxic Pocketbook is their CD. I'll be playing a few more of their numbers, not so much because they're terribly political, but more because they hit the streets of Santa Cruz, and I figure they might not just appreciate a little attention on the air, but also they got a beat, they got a rhythm, they got a few lyrics, so I can hear what they're saying, and like that. So anyway, you're tuned to 101.3 FM. Name of the show is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. I'm Robert. Be with you until 8, at which point Uncle Dennis will come in with From the Cream to the Dregs, which will be a musical show with some updates with from Earth First, as most folks who listen in are well aware already. In the guest with me is a special... No, in the studio with me is a special guest. Thank you. Oh, fine. Go ahead. Grin at me. Giggle at me. Oh, embarrass your host. Freedom. And Freedom just got back from the People's Republic, or is it the Fidelista Republic of Cuba, where you spent how long there?
We were in Cuba for 9 days. The first 3 days we were in the city of Havana. Then we went to Villa Clara. And, well, some of us went to Matanzas, which is more of a beach province. But I went to Villa Clara, which is where Che fought in the revolution. And we were actually there for the 26th of July, which was a very special day there in Cuba.
And that was the day that they took over the government, yeah? Or did they arrive from the mountains on that day? I don't remember. The Castroites in 1958.
And anyways, on the 26th of July, some of the comrades Che fought with were actually there in Villa Clara speaking with us. So that was
looking pretty
really
old
cool.
And gray and wrinkled.
They didn't look too old or too gray. I was
really
impressed.
That's
yeah.
50 years later. Or
I know. But
54 years, 53. Anyway, a number of years later.
And anyways, after Villa Clara, we returned back to Havana for the last 3 days of the trip.
And you did, of course, some surfing, played in the casinos, possibly. What did you do?
I did go swimming one day, but that was very rare, and that was actually after I sprained my ankle. But we visited a lot of hospitals and different educational facilities.
Did
we were very busy the whole time.
Did you attempt to occupy the jails in order to free the gay prisoners, as I always tease people about? Who are going to Cuba, since they have a notoriously, or have had in the past, a reputation for maintaining political prisoners in prisons. What did you ask any of the authorities about this? Am I just whistling Batista's song here? I mean, or, you know, the songs of those who are simply anti-Castro. What was your sense about that? Because you're an Occupy activist. You've been doing a lot of strong protests against local authorities. Did you have a similar... did you express yourself similarly against Cuban authoritarianism? Or?
Honestly, we were kept so busy the entire time that there wasn't much free time at all whatsoever to do any street work for what I wanted to do. I was kept so busy I couldn't do any of that research, and we were held in facilities where all the quote-unquote authorities already had plans laid out for us, and it was very specific on the subject we were learning about that day, such as sustainability or gardening in Cuba, the like healthcare and education, all that. We just had an extremely extensive schedule. I think we actually only had 8 hours a night those 9 days for free time, dinner, taking showers, and sleeping. So if you wanted to do anything, it would cut into your sleeping time.
Or your extracurricular sexual activity time. I assume you met a number of lovers overseas and developed some meaningful contacts. Just keeping a mum on that one, folks. So, in other words, you weren't able to say, hold it, I'm very interested in sustainability and healthcare, but I think I'll just walk down the street and check out a hospital myself. Of course, you had a problem. You don't speak Spanish, right?
Right, and that was one of the major preventatives for me going off on my own. But I was also in a foreign country where I didn't really know too much about the locals or about the area in general, so I didn't necessarily feel safe wandering off on my own in a foreign country.
Wait a minute, Cuba, isn't this
either.
A safe country where we have a paradisial situation? Well, again, I'm exaggerating, but you go to San Francisco. You feel safe on the streets of San Francisco? I mean, how do you feel up there?
Honestly, I'm not really the type of person to let fear inhibit me from doing anything.
I didn't think you were.
However, the group I was with was kind of very, not, I wouldn't say controlling, but they were looking out for safety, and they were also kind of legally responsible for me in certain aspects, so I didn't want them to be afraid, and I was trying to be respectful of the entire group as a whole, because it is a very good group that's been doing this for, it was actually the 20th anniversary. It's IFCO, Pastors for Peace group, based out of New York, that puts on this caravan every year in the summer, usually.
How many people were involved?
Oh, geez, wow. Well over 100 were involved. About 100 went on the actual caravan, which originally started in Canada and went through different parts of the United States. I got picked up on the West Coast.
On vehicles.
And buses, yeah. Yes. And then there were a couple of extra vehicles that were donated
as well.
Was
Curtis Relaford invited to come along?
I do not think so. I'm not sure, actually. I have no idea.
You know who Curtis is. Curtis is an African-American guy who is famous in Santa Cruz. He was one of three people who was ticketed for being in the last night parade along with Wes Modes and Whitney back in 2010. He also has a huge kind of double-barreled truck, and he takes supplies and has been doing for the last 8 years to New Orleans.
Oh, right. Yes. Curtis.
He's constantly let's put it this way. There's rather regular harassment from the police, whether it's parking tickets or move along or don't set up your display. At least that's what I've heard. I heard actually from Steve Plage a recent report that he was harassed at the town clock sometime in the last week. So.
Oh, that's really unfortunate. During General Assembly on Sunday at the post office, we actually saw him set up directly across from the clock tower, and he was being interviewed by the news. Which one was with
Phil
Gomez with?
Either 46 or 8 or something like that. Maybe, I don't think it was Fox, but
KCOS or
something like that.
KSBW, I think.
That was when they turned from the. We got them to avoid the fighting that was going on in the Occupy Santa Cruz General Assembly on Sunday to focus on Curtis, which was probably a better idea. Yeah, Curtis has been doing all kinds of regular stuff. I'm a big supporter of his, not so much because I'm well informed on him, but because I sort of, I guess when I see people being harassed by the police, even if they're skinheads who are of a totally different orientation than mine, I don't like it. I don't think anybody should be harassed by authorities, you know, and that includes ex-Batistas people, you know. So naturally I'm kind of interested in when that happened. So you got picked up here, a couple months ago with this caravan, and then you rode across the country to Florida and then took off from there?
No, I got picked up here in Santa Cruz on June 9th, and then we went into California, throughout Southern California, and we stopped at a different city every night. We drove about 12 hours on the bus and then stopped, gave a speech basically about Cuba, had a root speaker.
Slept out with the homeless.
No, we stayed in housing. They put us up for the night.
Yeah,
got to take a shower, which was great because it was 100 degrees the entire month for me. And anyways, we went to Nevada, Arizona, New Mexico, and drove through Mexico for 12 hours. And then went to Cuba from there.
You had to go to Mexico to get to Cuba.
Right. Oh, yeah. We met up in Texas. All of the routes from all over the states met up in McAllen, Texas, which is directly across the border from Mexico. And we had a 3-day orientation on essentially like the border crossing and humanitarian aid. We had to repackage it and just count it, do inventory.
What kind of humanitarian aid were you passing on?
We had one container of miscellaneous supplies, one container of educational supplies, and one container of medical supplies.
Any problems at the border with that these containers? Were you searched and so forth?
I mean, it's procedure to search. They have dogs sniffing everything, and I guess there was actually, I think, 6 monitors, computer monitors, that were seized at the border, not allowed to cross for no real reason at all. And we did get them back on our border crossing back into the United States.
Well, they were checking for your terrorist tendencies, probably. So you are one of how many converging caravans in Texas?
I believe there was 9 caravans, 9 buses and vehicles with people in it.
and they were coming from different places to pick up people, I guess both to pick up people and to educate people along the way. And, and what was the nature of the education? What kind of information or propaganda, if you will, was being put out by the pastors? Pastors for Peace?
Correct. Pastors for Peace. Yeah. Basically, they were talking about, or the rude speaker that I was with, more accurately, was talking about the healthcare system in Cuba and how it's socialized. So if you need healthcare, you don't have to pay for it. And education was free. There's a 0% homeless rate in Cuba. And it was mainly talking about a lot of the positive aspects of Cuba, which we got to see a lot of. But it also talked about the Cuban Five, which are five Cuban heroes who are imprisoned here in the United States, one of who is just on is on probation in Florida, but the other five or the other four are still here, and they're not actually terrorists, which is what they were charged for, but they are anti-terrorists because their country was going to be attacked, and they got to the information and exposed it to their government before the actual event happened. So then the United States government threw them in prisons over here.
Which attack are you referring to? Which proposed attack? What year are we talking about, do you know?
I believe it was in about, like, before 59, around.
You're talking about the Bay of
58.
Pigs?
You know, honestly, I'm not sure specifically what which attack it was that they were researching.
Didn't listen too closely to those orientations.
You know, they didn't say.
Take notes. Yeah, they didn't say.
It's been a long time since.
Yeah.
I've been actually in Southern California for the last month recovering from my sprained ankle that I got in Cuba.
But you didn't get dysentery, did you?
I plead the fifth.
Very interesting. So you went to Texas, you went to Mexico, and then by boat you went to Cuba?
I also plead the fifth.
Uh-huh. Make note, FBI, just in case for future reference. It's illegal to go to Cuba currently? What's the story on that?
Correct, yes. There is a blockade, only if you're American. Is it illegal to go to Cuba? Because the Canadians we were with and the Mexicans we were with came in solidarity, but their countries do not have a blockade, so they were legally allowed to travel to the country of Cuba, but we are not. So that was one of the major purposes of this Pastors for Peace caravan, is to bring awareness about what's going on in Cuba and to go out, break the blockade, practice civil disobedience, and bring in humanitarian aid, because of the blockade, there's not enough medical supplies, such as aspartame. They're really struggling over there for really simple things that we could have over in Cuba. They don't, you know, it's really unfortunate that this blockade is.
Explain what aspartame is and what it does.
I'm sorry, did I say aspartame?
You did.
I meant acetaminophen, which is aspirin. Aspartame is no good. You don't want that anywhere. Sorry.
Aspartame is. We won't get into that.
Aspartame. It's a chemical that's usually found in diet soda. It's like a sweetener, artificial sweetener.
So you were bringing
cancer.
Soda pop to
No, we
Cuba.
Didn't bring that.
No,
we didn't
I
bring that.
So, very interesting. So, what kind of penalties do you and the other pastors face if your criminal behavior is properly exposed once we have removed the Fifth Amendment, the troublesome Fifth Amendment, from the Constitution, which actually is sort of in process right now? In other words, what you face? Prison? You face fines? What do you face if you're convicted of traveling to Cuba?
I'm not sure. That's a good question, but I'm not too worried about it.
Naive, innocent you. Yes. Well, so you just felt it was the right thing to do.
Absolutely.
And you were curious about what's going on there. And you were also, as a person in solidarity with political prisoners and concerned about people getting medical supplies, you jumped on the bandwagon. Shocking. Well, was a lot of people your age, a lot of equal proportion of men and women, anybody in a wheelchair?
Toward the end of it, I was in a wheelchair, like I've said probably a million times. I'll explain that story soon.
Sprained ankle.
Yeah. There was a guy, Lou, from D.C., who had a prosthetic leg. And, I mean, there was a wide variety of ages there, but on the border crossing back, Lou's prosthetic leg actually broke. The paracord that held his leg up broke, so he had to carry it. And him and I were walking. Actually, we had to lead the walk because we were the slowest people at the time. I was on crutches, and we had to go up this huge ramp and then go at least probably half a mile total on crutches.
Or
and
you,
for him,
you couldn't be wheeled, huh?
Missing leg. No, we didn't have wheelchairs there, yeah.
Hmm.
It was hot, really hot. But, I mean, I'm just really impressed with the Caravanistas because we went through some extreme conditions that month, and people of all ages, you know, they just sucked it up and held it together for the Cubans and to be in solidarity and just for this mission.
Who financed it? You can also take the fifth on this if you'd like.
I did a trade for myself for my car to get there. And that's about as much information as I'll give on that.
Who paid for the criminal supplies to the evil government of Cuba?
Those were gifted, I think, from different organizations.
Are there any nuclear weapons involved here?
No, come on.
toxins, perhaps? Bacteriological?
Nope.
Just checking here. So, you were there for about 10 days, you say?
9 days. Mm-hmm.
9 days. And what's the most striking recollection you have of Cuba, aside from breaking your ankle?
Sprain it.
I'm sorry. You can talk about that if you want. How is your ankle doing, by the way? I don't see
it. It's much better. I don't have a cast. I had a boot. Basically, I think I'll tell that story because it affected me for a little bit of time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was toward the end, so it was most memorable, I think. One of the most memorable things, but
I'd like to apologize to our listeners for this non-homeless discussion on Free Radio Santa Cruz, which I usually would be banning, but I've been seduced by this story, and I haven't even heard the story. I'm probably... But go ahead with your tale of about this accident that happened to you.
Mm-hmm. So I was in the Malecon in Cuba, which is by a huge body of water, obviously. Well, most of Cuba is, but anyways, this is where I believe this is where the humanitarian aid was sent into. And I was out there one night. I had a little bit of Cuba Libre with some friends.
Drinking again?
Just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to pee, but there's no public restrooms in Cuba.
Taking after Santa Cruz.
Yeah, just like Santa Cruz. Very mm-hmm. common. So I did what I always do and found a tree to climb under. And it was on the slope. It was dark. And I slipped. Not in my pee. I did not pee and then
Ooh,
slipped. I
this is getting kind of gross, babe. I don't know what to tell you.
And then peed. I'm not,
babe.
It
might be kind of kinky, though.
I'm not.
Go a little
okay,
further.
Come on.
Go ahead.
Anyways.
So you slipped. Didn't
I
hit
slipped.
Your pee, but you did hit your ankle.
I peed after I slipped.
You slipped and then peed.
Yeah. I was in so much pain, I had to hobble. My friend had to help carry me, and then I had to continue drinking.
With wet pants, you had to go back? No. That's good.
I was wearing a dress.
Yeah, this is, you know, I imagine this can be embarrassing for anyone when this happens, but particularly painful.
I wasn't
painful.
Embarrassed.
You were just in
I
pain.
I was just in a lot of pain.
You were screaming, probably.
I wasn't screaming, but
screaming.
I couldn't walk, and nothing like that had ever happened to me before. I've never sprained or broken anything, knock on wood, but long story short, I spent the next night in my, well, that night in my bed and came down the next day and then went to the hospital, I think, the following day.
So you got direct experience of medical care.
Exactly, yes. I was in and out of the hospital in 30 minutes and I got a pair of crutches for free. I got an x-ray for free and I was told that if I needed a cast, I would have got that for free as well. And that itself was just a really awesome experience because it wasn't just hearing about the medical system.
Of course, you are the privileged blonde, a young American who is, not only are you with Pastors for Peace, but you're a poster child of the youth coming over to help, the revolution, if you will.
It's
right?
funny. Yeah, it's funny you say that. I was actually put in an article, The Grandma in Cuba, and it was, the article was called Young People Who Want to Save the World.
Yeah, so in other words, you'd be likely to get better treatment than, let's say, I don't know, a political prisoner who sprained his ankle in jail after a beating or something like that, if that's what's going on in prisons, as it probably is throughout the world that happens, is my suspicion. I think it's a well-justified one. Did you see anything when you were in the hospital? Did you see anybody in an emergency room? If you go to the Dominican, you can find a lot of people waiting there for hours and hours and hours. Although, actually, last time I went to Dominican in the emergency room, I did okay fairly quickly. Of course, I have insurance. Other people don't have insurance. What did you see from? Did you see anybody else get treatments? Do you have any contact with other people? And I know you don't speak Spanish, so it must have been difficult to get any kind of. I should ask you, at any point in your trip, did you have an independent Spanish interpreter, someone who was not hired by the government to act as a go-between?
I did speak to someone who spoke English, who was from Cuba, but he had an English accent, because that's where he learned English from, someone from England.
Mm-hmm.
And that was interesting. I mean, he just told me about his life there, basically, and asked me questions about America, and I told him the realities that are going on, and it's not all.
Did you get any critics of Cuba talk to you on your voyage? People who had criticisms of the government, or...
Honestly, the people who had anything negative to say about Cuba didn't really have much to say at all, because they weren't informed, and they just said they did not want to hear about it. And that was mainly in Texas.
But not in Cuba itself?
Not in Cuba, no.
Did you talk to any pastors who... or people in the Pastors for Peace group who actually spoke Spanish and went out and had broader conversations with people, or were you pretty regimented in this move from one thing to the next deal?
We had a pretty strict schedule.
What would you like people to know that, because, you know, I've been trying to hit the sordid underside, the unmentioned, the unmentionable, the... And it's hard to get much information about this, because, first of all, you didn't have much communication, and I guess that's the main reason. But what would you like to say about this, that you want people to hear about, positive or negative or something in between, about your trip, what you learned, what you want to pass on?
Well, I thought the experience was really fantastic, because it opened my eyes to a whole new culture and world. And I think one of the most important things I learned on this trip was that a government, no matter what kind of government, in my opinion, is still kind of a negative thing, because it takes away people's personal freedoms and their ability to govern themselves. So even though I kept hearing that Cuba was a great country because it had socialism, I still felt like there was oppression there, a lot of oppression, no matter what.
Did you see any oppression? Anything you could put your finger on?
I didn't specifically see any oppression, because I didn't see many police there, other than our police escorts.
Were you allowed to walk freely, or were you directed a lot around where you went?
We were directed most of the time, especially me.
Did anybody ever object and say, excuse me, I came over here not to be told where to walk, I'll go over here? That didn't happen.
Not really.
Yeah, that's too bad.
Yeah.
And from an Occupy person, shame on you.
I have no excuse. I'm so glad I went.
You have an excuse.
Even though it was...
You want to be able to get back. You didn't want to go to jail. You had no necessary... And the people who were supportive of you would probably not be supportive of your taking an independent course, necessarily.
Right. I felt like my autonomy was not as much recognized in Cuba as it is here in the United States, not just by the government, but by the people around me. And I feel like autonomy is something that, as people, we just reserve the right to have, to obtain, because we are individuals, and we should be able to make conscious decisions for ourselves, as long as we're not interfering with anyone else's personal lives. You know, as long as we're not hurting anybody or ruining their lives, then...
I would say that goes without saying, you know. Unfortunately, in these days... Not only do you have to say it, you got to do it, because it's getting increasingly restricted. Santa Cruz, probably Cuba, elsewhere. Although I don't know. I mean, you probably don't know the history of Cuba, whether in the last 5 or 10 years things have gotten better or worse for people who do attempt to assert their autonomy. I'm sure there are anarchist groups in Cuba, probably underground, who are concerned about these issues, and you probably didn't have much contact with them. Pastors for Peace is, you know, it's a government-sponsored group.
It's not, actually. They practiced civil disobedience and did not get a permit by any means going.
Cuban government,
right.
That's what I mean.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, obviously not a U.S. government, but once you were in Cuba, you're under the sort of the thumb of the government. You didn't, you know, swim into Cuba and talk to people quietly to find out really what's going on. Organize in the streets, start an Occupy Havana. Ah, boy, then we could talk by phone for about 5 minutes until you disappeared into the catacombs. Or not, as the case may be, I don't know. So I'd asked you to come on the show, you generously agreed, and then I got spaced out because this is the next question I'm going to be asking about this protest that I've been announcing and that you've been probably following a little more closely than I have in terms of the planning and the discussion around it, because you were at the last General Assembly of Occupy Santa Cruz, which is one of the creators of this protest, or supporters of it anyway. This is a vigil that's happening tomorrow night. You brought a flyer for it. You actually have it in front of you. You want to tell us, I mean, I've already talked about it a little, but what's this all about there? Tell me, Freedom.
Yeah, this is actually a candlelight tent vigil tomorrow, and it's protesting homeless camp sweeps. You know, the last 7 weeks, there's been 300 citations, 100 camps destroyed, and 150 arrests. So we're holding this event to have tents, candles, people, and just kind of be in solidarity and recognize that we are all in this together. We're all part of the same family, and we want to be in solidarity for each other, especially in such an economic crisis where our basic resources are being stripped of us and our rights are also being stripped of us. So it's a good time to come together tomorrow at 7 p.m. at City Hall. And, I mean, there's going to be a march, possibly to the Santa Cruz Police Department. And we'll see what happens. It should just be fairly mellow and...
There'll be food, I understand.
Oh, yes.
Too.
India Joe's is going to be bringing food.
I've actually heard the update on that is that there's a second protest plan for next Tuesday at City Hall as well, during the day when there actually be offices open and so forth. This is what I've heard. And Friday there will be food, but I think it's going to be supplied by Generous Gene, the genie of the Occupy movement, who whips up food out of the air and has been doing that for months at Occupy Santa Cruz. You know Gene?
Yeah, I thought she was working with India Joe.
They talked today, I understand, though, and he's got apparently something he's doing on Friday, so he's going to come on Tuesday, she's going to work on Friday. I think that's... It's my understanding of what's going to happen. So if you want India Joe's and you're just coming for the food, forget the vigil. Come back on Tuesday. You know, we don't quite know what time it's going to be or even if it's going to be. I think it probably is going to be because this is one vigil is not going to change the Santa Cruz Police Department, Rangers, and City Manager Martin Bernal's agenda on anti-homeless activity, I think. But so you've been involved with Occupy Santa Cruz. How long have you been involved with activism generally, Freedom?
I would say I got introduced to activism really when I moved out here to Santa Cruz in the fall, I believe in August or September. I started going to WAM as a caretaker. And
Women and Men Medical Marijuana Alliance.
Correct, mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the greatest collectives there is.
But one of the smallest, unfortunately. I mean, we don't know. It takes only a small fraction of the patients in Santa Cruz in. I always have to include this because much as I like supporting medical marijuana, I'm also aware of numerous criticisms of Valerie Corral and Mike Corral in terms of how they blockaded other groups from, for example, getting legitimacy for 5 years between 2000 and 2005. Let's put it this way. They were unsupportive, and their group had the monopoly position. Finally, Greenway, a dispensary system, opened in 2005. And I always have to include this because much as I think it's important to give credit to activists like Corral, who is an activist and was an activist, sometimes activists like revolutionaries become bureaucrats. And that they have those qualities that get into that situation, and so I have to raise those issues. But having said that, you became involved with WAM as a caretaker. And indeed, I may actually be doing some medical marijuana treatment myself because I've got a colon condition which might benefit inflammation-wise from either THC or CND. And I'm just kind of beginning to at least think about doing research on that issue. It's still very hard because in Santa Cruz you have only one distribution center. You can't go to WAM and get medication, for instance. You have to be a member of their collective. You have to be accepted into their collective. Some have called it a cult. I don't want to say that. Some have called Sub Rosa cult. Some have called Free Radio a cult. Some have called Huff a cult, shockingly enough. Huff, by the way, is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group I work with. Along the same issues that you're talking about will be raised tomorrow night, the issues around homeless civil rights activity. So you came and you became involved with WHAM. Were you involved with medical marijuana in other cities? Or?
Yeah, about a year prior, but I had never caretaked for anyone until I moved to Santa Cruz.
What does that involve, caretaking?
Well, the specific caretaking job I had was just to clean and cook, basically make meals for someone who was very sick at the time, and he became a really great friend.
Is he still with us?
He is. He is struggling with addiction problems right now. I saw him downtown the other night, but...
Addiction with...
I am not sure exactly
what
it is.
He's a street person?
Maybe alcohol. No, he's not.
He's housed?
He was. So we kind of fell out of contact. Unfortunately, some things in his life happened, and yeah, there's not much I could do about it.
So you became a caretaker for a number. And you were paid for it? This is a paid position? Or?
No.
It's a volunteer.
Because mm-hmm.
I know a number of in-home caretaker workers who are trying to maintain their wages, their jobs, and who do take care of people, some of whom I imagine use medical marijuana, although there are a lot of other, you know, pharmaceuticals, drugs, and problems that people have. So you became involved with Occupy Santa Cruz, and I know you went to Washington, D.C., because that's how you and I became, I think we did some interviews by phone.
Oh, yeah.
6 or 8 months ago, mm-hmm. and you talked about the situation there. And you've been a pretty there's a lot of people in Occupy have become more passive or discouraged. Well, the numbers of Occupy Santa Cruz explicitly have somewhat drastically dropped, and they've also but they're still they're regular meetings. You told me that for example yesterday there were about 20 people meeting in front of the courthouse on Ocean Street or on Water Street.
Yeah, Water.
Water Street.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened at the last Occupy meeting? Anything exciting? What went down?
Last night, basically, we just planned this a little bit about the candlelit tent vigil and had a little... We got more flyers and stuff to pass out. And I was kind of talking about... Well, I mean, I kind of wanted to talk right now about how I was gone for the last 2 months total. The first month... traveling, going into Cuba, coming back, and then after I sprained my ankle and stopped, I ended up stopping in Orange County on the caravan back through the States mm-hmm. instead of coming up to Santa Cruz
mm-hmm.
because that's where my family lives.
Mm-hmm.
And I recovered there.
Family?
Yes. mm-hmm. Yeah, it explains a lot about me, I guess, about mm-hmm. why I'm so
rebelling against your
maybe?
Dad and mom.
I love them, though. I'm not rebelling against them, just their
ideas.
Yeah, ideology.
Or lack of ideas.
Yeah, right. But anyways, so I thought it was important to mention this, but when I came back to Santa Cruz just recently, about last week, I went on a bike ride downtown to see the street people, to go out, to go talk to people, catch up on what was happening, what had I missed since I'd been gone. I was reading a little bit about these camp sweeps, and I was curious to see where are the people now, where are they hanging out? Where can we socialize? And to my dismay, there was nobody. I saw maybe two people downtown that I recognized, and that scared me so much because Santa Cruz is a small town. And when I'm down there, I'll usually see at least a dozen people that I know or have acquaintances or have seen before, you know, similar faces, but there was nothing. It was really disturbing.
Was this the... How many times did you go downtown and see this happening? Was it just once, or was it a number of times?
Since the last few days. It's been pretty mellow around downtown. There haven't been many street people that I've seen because of the sweeps, I think. And it's really discouraging because I've also noticed that the culture in Santa Cruz is really lacking. There's not the music on the streets every night like there has been, and there's not people out there trying to trade or sell their jewelry, and just a lot of the culture of Santa Cruz. Part of the reason I was attracted here in the first place, and the positive vibes and all that just disappeared, and that has been something that's really bothered me the last week since I've been home. So I think it's really, 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 really important for us to go out to this candlelight 10 vigil tomorrow night and try
7 o'clock City Hall.
At 7 o'clock at City Hall.
And 7 at night.
Correct. 7 p.m. And just try to help each other out, figure out what our needs are as a community and how we can provide that for each other, because this isn't right. I mean, India got the right. The Supreme Court ruled that it is a right to sleep. And we don't have that. We are so far behind here, even though we say we have freedoms of speech. You get arrested. And in D.C., you cannot practice your freedom of speech on federal property, or you will go to jail. And that's exactly what happened. A dozen of my friends just had a trial and actually got community service for protesting on the Supreme Court steps. How absurd is that? They got community service.
Did they plead?
They were doing a community service.
Did they plead, or did they go to trial?
And they went to trial.
So they were found guilty by a jury or by a judge?
By a judge.
Charming. Of course, judges are difficult to get past, as the Santa Cruz 11 found out to their chagrin a couple weeks ago with Judge Burdick. Apropos of that, I think I'll take this opportunity. You got time to hang for a while?
Oh, yeah.
Excellent.
No rush.
Okay.
Open mic's not until 8.
That's right. You will be at the Sub Rosa's open mic tonight.
Correct. That's where the police can find me.
And the police can find you. And your fans, those interested in hearing it. What are you going to be doing at open mic at the Sub Rosa at 7:03 Pacific tonight?
I will be singing a song called Secret War, written by my friend Thomas, the president of Poetry Club in Southern California. And
a cappella or with a guitar?
It'll be a cappella.
Are you prepared to give us a preview of that?
Let me see. Let me rifle through my book while we're talking, and then maybe in
while
a minute or
that,
two.
I'm going to read this story that just came out. This is in today's Chronicle, and it's in the section that I usually get has the most information statewide. It's a story by Bob Agelko. Homeless have right to reclaim seized items. Federal Appeals Court. A city that seizes homeless people's property from a street or a sidewalk must preserve it so that the owner has a chance to reclaim it, a federal appeals court ruled Wednesday. That's the good news. The bad news is Santa Cruz doesn't do this. Santa Cruz police and rangers, particularly the rangers, and I'm also now told the police, in spite of claims to the contrary, destroy homeless property, treat it as trash, though in some cases some homeless property is taken by police. And you can find it 3 or 4 or 5 days later if you go during the tiny interval of time when the police department's property is open, property locker. That is, normally the police department is open Monday through Friday, I believe, 8 to 5. But you can only get in there to get your property on Tuesdays and Thursdays during the lunch hour, and then for a 15 or a half hour interval in the afternoon. Seems like a deliberately abusive process, but it's probably being justified economically. But I also will say that Fresno, in the Kincaid decision back in 2007, was found in violation of state law by a federal court, not saving homeless property, but destroying camps and sweeping and so forth. What Santa Cruz is doing right now, what San Francisco is doing right now, what other cities are probably doing as well. And they had to pay a $2.3 million settlement to homeless people. And we in Santa Cruz, who have been concerned about this, have often talked about, we'll send out people with cameras and we'll take pictures and we'll document. But unfortunately, our organizational skills, and I include my own lack of skills in this, are very limited. The energy is limited. But perhaps with this new kind of initiative happening from people concerned about doing a vigil, doing marches, there will be a concerted effort to actually start documenting the destruction of homeless property that happens, by report from homeless people anyway, regularly here in Santa Cruz. However, this is a new decision. It isn't just the Fresno decision only affected Fresno. This decision apparently is a statewide decision, and I'll read a little bit more about it. The government may not take property like a thief in the night. Chief Vogel, take note.
Rather, it must announce its intentions and give the property owner a chance to argue against the taking, the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco said. The 2-1 decision, which has statewide implications, upheld a federal judge's order last year that allowed residents of L.A.'s Skid Row to leave personal possessions on the sidewalk during brief absences to eat or use a restroom. And I have personally heard stories recently, particularly one, of a person who was watching the property of someone else, and Officer Winston came by and said, "You can't watch it for someone else. We're confiscating it." It makes a normally peaceful man like me really pissed to hear this kind of stuff coming from a thug with a gun and an attitude. And more worse than that, the backing of the police department and the bureaucrats who control the city, city manager, behind him. So I will continue with my suppressed rage here. Police could seize property in the Los Angeles Skid Row case only, and now statewide apparently. In fact, Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals concerns 9 or 10 states, so it's not just our state. It's all over the West. Only if it was hazardous or appeared to have been abandoned, the court said, but it must leave notice of where it was taken and give the owner up to 90 days to retrieve it. State law, anyway. In the Bay Area, homeless advocates said those safeguards are often ignored in practice. When San Francisco police take property from a sidewalk or a homeless encampment, they bring it to the Department of Public Works yard at 2323 Cesar Chavez Street, where it is supposed to be held for 90 days, a period specified by California law. That's actually stated by Bob, the writer of this story, as fact. I have no idea where he's getting this from. Maybe that's what the police department tells him. He isn't saying that he's observed it or researched it. In fact, said Jennifer Friedenbach, a woman I know up in San Francisco, executive director of the Coalition on Homelessness, many homeless people report seeing their clothes and even medicine thrown into dumpsters and aren't told where police are taking the items they seize. It's pretty rare that people can actually get their property back, she said, and that's my understanding of Santa Cruz as well. By the way, if you want to interrupt at any point, feel free to do so. Not so, said Darish Kayan, superintendent of Street Environmental Services of the Department of Public Works. Under a 2004 policy, police and city social workers inform homeless people that their property is at the department's yard, which is open around the clock and stores all items with bags and lapels. We think we have a system that's working quite well, he said. In other words, translation is, don't sue us, we've got this covered. Actually, you know, I don't know Darius Kayan. He may well be, if speaking the truth as he knows it, but frankly, and I haven't researched San Francisco, but I haven't heard that they're remarkably different than Santa Cruz, and I see what they do in Santa Cruz, and I tend to believe Jennifer Friedenbach, executive director of the Coalition on Homelessness, more than I would him. In Oakland, officials agreed in 2008 to allow homeless people to reclaim their property under standards outlined in Wednesday's ruling, but police recently seized and destroyed items that the homeless kept in shopping carts outside a downtown county office building, said attorney Elisa De La Piana of the East Bay Community Law Center. Oakland is working on revisions to its policy, said Alex Katz, spokesman for the city attorney Barbara Parker. When it comes to homeless people, cities are often tempted to ignore state law, said Della Piana, who helped homeless Fresno residents, the case I talked about, win a $2.35 million settlement in 2008 for that city's destruction of their property. Wednesday's ruling involved people who were allowed to live on the sidewalks in a Los Angeles area known as Skid Row under a 2007 legal settlement, the Jones settlement, until the city could build adequate housing for them. The court said that typically kept their possessions in carts provided by social service organizations. When they stepped away, police would seize and destroy the items, citing a local ordinance against leaving property on a sidewalk. That violated the constitutional ban on unreasonable seizures, Judge Kim Wardlaw said in the majority opinion. Dissenting Judge Consuelo Callahan said that the Constitution does not recognize ownership rights in unattended personal property left on public sidewalks. And that's the story, Homeless Have the Right to Reclaim Seized Items, by Bob Agelko, a federal appeals court decision in the second section of today's San Francisco Chronicle. Any thoughts on that, Freedom?
Yeah, just one word. Wow.
Yeah?
Wow.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's, you know, it's sort of obvious, and I don't know why it hasn't been the case before, that it takes apparently a lot of legal muscle to get to this point. And it's amazing how long these things can go on. I mean, for instance, I have a case that has been going on now for 10.5 years, involving the Santa Cruz City Council's false arrest of me for going into City Council and making a mock Nazi salute when they were harassing a peace activist, a woman who wanted to speak at the mic. And it was, you know, I simply said nothing. I raised my arm and then turned around to talk to her. She went back to her seat after being threatened by arrest with then-Mayor Chris Crown. And I was ordered to leave the chambers. And I said, no, this is a public meeting. And they immediately stopped the meeting and had me arrested, handcuffed, taken to jail, and held there. No charges were ever filed against me, but we sued. We said, you can't do this to members of the public. But they have avoided it. It's gone to court, up to the federal court, the same court twice. Federal court has found against us, but it went up to a higher court, and they found for us. The Supreme Court didn't want to hear the case, so now we're going to trial. But it takes a very, very long time for civil cases. Now, this is a criminal case, so it's a little different. But what it means here is that when we go to the city officials, as Occupy Santa Cruz activists did back in the fall, you may remember trying to get the bathrooms open in the park when there was a large encampment there, and the city officials were sort of, I don't want to say maliciously, because it's more like bureaucratically rather than maliciously, but it has a malicious aspect to it in terms of its effect on people. Closing the bathrooms at night. Bathrooms are always closed at night in the parks, which is also, to me, a form of discrimination against people who have to have access to public facilities. You were talking about this before. There are public bathrooms downtown until about 9 or 10. Mm-hmm. And I suppose there are bathrooms in bars later. And there are public restrooms that are actually less than sort of pee-on-the-wall urinal types. I'm not sure how the women's bathroom looks like, but I can tell you what the men's does. There are three city-sponsored visitors' bathrooms downtown in Santa Cruz. One of them is in Pizza My Heart, one of them is in the Cafe Gratitude, and another one is in the Bookshop Coonerty, more popularly known as the Bookshop Santa Cruz. And you can actually go in there, unless you're me and banned from that particular place, and you can use the bathroom. You know, and it's a nice bathroom, I understand. I've been told. Actually, there's some people who have been banned who've walked in to use the bathroom anyway, and they've said, Becky Johnson, for instance, has been banned from the Bookshop Santa Cruz. And she said, no, this is a public bathroom. It's paid for with taxpayer dollars. I'm going to go use it. And, you know, they said, well, you have to talk to her. No, I'm going to go use the bathroom. And so it's really important, you know, to be able to assert that right of autonomy, I think, that you talked about earlier. And I think maybe that's what I'm hoping people will begin to do, and begin to understand that that's what homeless people have to do simply to survive. Mm-hmm. Sleep at night, even though it's illegal under Municipal Code 6.36010A after 11.
647E.
And under the Penal Code 647E, it's illegal to sleep lodging anywhere in the state if the judge defines that or the sheriffs decide that's lodging, as you say. So this also impacts activists like yourself. You're not houseless. You're not homeless.
I am.
Oh, you are?
Mm-hmm.
Well, why are you in? I don't want to talk to homeless people. Get out of here.
I don't smell.
I thought you were update. Well, yeah, but you probably will at some point, and then I'd be very upset. It affects political activists whom you know who are not houseless, because the same kind of 647E lodging law is not only used against people, and Linda LaMaster faces a trial, Gary Johnson's in jail, Ed Fry is under house arrest for having done this, and not because these people, well, Gary needed to, but they did so because they wanted to show that you have a right to protest publicly with a petition at your seat of government, at the building that, you know, where all this is being done, at the city, in this case it was at the county building, the courthouse. And so the reality is this law impacts people who are homeless, but it also impacts anybody who wants to sit down with a sign in a place and maintain a vigil, let's say, there, even if they're doing nothing wrong. And it affects
the rest of us now, because I think people are not doing that because they're afraid they're going to be arrested or cited or harassed for doing that. You mentioned there was some harassment that happened around the county building yesterday, last night.
Oh, yeah. It was during General Assembly, and a few members of Occupy went over and filmed the event. And I guess they were saying that some people who were assumingly homeless or traveling or whatever, they were outside in front of the courthouse, but not in front of it, actually behind it, across from San Lorenzo River area. And they just started getting rousted by the police for no apparent reason. And so one of the members from Occupy got some footage of that and told us what had happened during the assembly.
You know, I think that's a really important part of all this. People like Brent Adams, who are facing 7 years in prison as part of the Santa Cruz 11, partially for his being present at and filming in an occupation of the 75 River Street Wells Fargo Bank, and that's an interesting headline in and of itself. Today, Wells Fargo Bank is the headline of the Santa Cruz Sentinel. For folks in Royal Oak, which is a little town near Salinas, are fighting foreclosure down there. And I don't know if I brought that along. I can probably bring it up on the screen. Maybe I'll talk about it on Sunday. But activists like Brent are reporters, Alex DeRosi, Bradley Allen, myself, Becky Johnson, were dragged through the courts and are still being dragged through the courts on these issues. And it's not so much that it hurts us, it does, of course, but it deters us, it exhausts us, it intimidates us, it pisses us off. But it also hurts those who are watching, because it interferes with legitimate attempts to educate the community about what these banks are doing, what the authorities are doing, how homeless people are being treated. And that's why I'm hopeful that this documentary activity that Brent is doing, one of the few people who's doing, I think Brent and Alex and Bradley are really three big documentarians of what goes on around a lot of the issues that the mainstream media has no interest in. Homeless people losing their property, losing their medicine, losing their health.
All right.
And their rights, yeah. And, you know, I would say that I hope these videos that are being taken are being posted on different websites, whether it's Santa Cruz Indie Media or Occupy Santa Cruz or other places, YouTube. This kind of documentation is really, I think, important in getting information out to the broader community. And I'm hoping that this is the kind of documentation that we can use to force a recalcitrant city government to stop seizing the property of homeless people and destroying it. It's not going to be as simple as saying, hey, the court said, now you should behave, I don't think, although they're probably going to get a little more nervous about what they're doing, and they'll claim, oh, we're following the law, but we have to document what they're doing and indicate every time they come and take homeless people's property. There's a whole education campaign that has to start happening, where you have to get people go out and say, here's a form, go to the homeless person, say, fill it out, not for the fucking government, but because so you can write down what your property was taken. There should be a whole stream of claims of property stolen in the last year, destroyed in the last year, particularly in the, let's just even think of the homeless campground. Did you ever stay in that campground in the San Lorenzo Park?
I did stay in San Lorenzo for a little bit, but I did move up to the courthouse steps after not too much time and stayed on county property.
Were you there on December 8th when the campground was cleared by the police?
I don't think I was there that day.
Well, I know that there are at least five people, Occupy Santa Cruz activists, and then one homeless woman, who were arrested and taken to jail and held on high bail. And the next day the bail disappeared and the charges disappeared. And the police reappeared to stop people from going to City Hall. They bivouacked there to stop people from actually going in. They closed the offices. There's a real police state activity going on December 8th. But the fact is that there is a lot of destruction that people need to file claims for. And in order to do that, you need an organized kind of routine process where people go out and suggest to homeless people this is being done, and we also need some legal muscle. So there's a lot of stuff that remains to be done. But I think this vigil is really a really good first step tomorrow at 7 o'clock, I think you said.
Yep, 7 p.m. At City Hall.
Yeah, there's going to be food from Gene and
bring your stories of what's happened to you and what's happened to your friends, and bring
a tent if you have one.
Bring a tent, and we'll see what transpires. Let's see who we got here. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Freedom and Robert.
Hello, Robert. This is John Kilking. How's it going?
Hey, Dangerous John. What's up?
Hey, sorry to give you a little bit of an update. There's going to be a foreclosure summit on September 15th in San Jose, talking about how to prevent foreclosures, among other things.
Remember, only you can prevent foreclosures.
Yeah. So anyway, the details are on my website, peacefulreach.com.
Say it again, really slowly, real slowly.
Details are on my website, peacemovies.com.
Peace, what?
Peacemovies.com.
Peacemovies.com, sorry. And what time and what place is this September 15th foreclosure forum in San Jose?
It's going to be at the Rainbow Church in San Jose. I forget exactly where it is, but it's on the website.
Well,
or you can go to occupypbworks.org.com. Occupy San Jose WikiLink website.
You know, you got. I'm sorry, you got to say it again. Are you catching this, Freedom, yourself? It's kind of hard to hear. You better say it one more time and say it slowly.
PBWorks. Occupy.pbworks.com.
PP like in pee-pee weepy or pee-pee, like in poo-poo or pee-pee?
As in peanut butter.
As in what?
As in peanut butter.
So PB, P and then B.
Works.
So and I guess
it works.
I imagine rather than try to puzzle this out, it's if they go to the Occupy San Jose website, they can get more information on this foreclosure event.
Yeah, it's probably on there, too.
Okay. Well, that's good. That's good information. How are you doing? Is your home being foreclosed on there, John?
No, not my home personally, although I had a friend who had to move out of her accommodations because the person went through a short sale, the owner went through a short sale.
Mm-hmm.
So it is happening everywhere, I guess.
I suppose those sales are still happening in Santa Cruz. People could always go on down to the sales. I know this happened with farmers out in the 30s. They would try to sell somebody's farm, and there would be people there who would bid $1 and wouldn't allow other people to bid, and they'd buy the farm and give it back to the farmer. It was kind of as people in New York City used to, when they would evict people from apartments, they'd take their furniture and take it right back upstairs again and put it back in the building. So, it's direct action, although all this is, of course, highly illegal, and we don't want to be accused of conspiring to violate the law here, certainly not. But there are ways of directly responding to the kind of bank theft that's going on around the country. And it's encouraging to see this showing up on the front page of the Sentinel in a sympathetic story, which is unusual. Of course, it is a sympathetic story one county over in Monterey County, so that has to be considered, too.
And the latest project I'm working on is I'm going to come out with two little booklets, Peace Movies 2011 and Peace Movies 2012, I'm hoping to be able to sell those door-to-door in San Jose, because the ordinance in San Jose says you can do it without a permit.
Peace Movies 2011 and Peace Movies 2012. People can, I know you were selling a monthly publication, right? And you have a rack in front of the courthouse.
Yeah, in front of Camera 3 in downtown San Jose, or at the Peace Center for free.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's going to start happening in 2013. So if I'm hoping to be able to have some people help me with that. It will pay $10 an hour, plus if you sell more than 3 books an hour, going door to door, then you get $2 a book.
So if anybody's interested in helping you, John, I'll have them give me a call, and I will then forward their their information to you. The number to call for me off air is 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And if you're interested in John's proposal to go door to door selling Peace Movies books to all the war weary population of San Jose,
yeah, right.
Anything else?
And the statistics on that are pretty encouraging. I mean, on my website, I got like half the people who responded to my survey question said they would buy it for $7.
Said they were what? I'm sorry.
Statistic. Yeah.
They would buy it for $7?
Yeah, and then less people would buy it for $5. It was kind of weird because this internet guru I was reading a while back said that when you have a price that ends at $7, more people buy your stuff.
Well, I will leave these commercial details. John, I'm gonna leave these commercial details to you because it's not my.
I know you don't want to do commercial advertising for radio. I understand.
Well, that's not it. It's just I'm not. You know, I mean, this is stuff which people can get into with you if they're, if they want to get in touch. And again, 423 Huff. You want to get in touch? If you're concerned about violence in the movies and war movies and how to get to people's more educated on peace movies. Give me a call, 423 Huff, and I'll pass it on to Dangerous John in San Jose.
Yeah, and then I'm going to visit Santa Cruz on Saturday, so I send you an email about when you want to get together.
Okay,
so
we'll try and answer that. We'll see what's happening. I've got a meeting with an attorney on Saturday about this lawsuit I mentioned earlier, where we're trying to hold the city council to the heels of the fire so they'll stop threatening to arrest people for non-crimes there in order to shut them down when they protest what's going on there. Anything else? Okay.
Well, I think we got it covered pretty much.
Well, thank you, man.
All right, talk to you later.
All right, John. Phone lines are open. I forgot to mention this, but I guess I better. 427-3772. That's the number here, 427-FRSC. Free Radio Santa Cruz is what you're listening to at 101.3 FM. In the studio with me is Free, recently in Cuba.
Freedom. Yes.
Actually, there is a different person called Free.
Correct.
Who does a Tuesday show when he shows up in the studio. I don't know, has he been showing up lately? I'm not sure. But you've been interviewed in Free Radio before about this, or this is your first interview?
This is the first interview on this specific topic.
About Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah, call in if you'd like, 427-3772. 427-3772. Area code 831, for those of you who are outside the area, 831-427-3772, and we can talk about this more. Also about this upcoming vigil tomorrow, and there's a... we also have planned another vigil. I've been a little tentative about it because I want to see how people show up for this vigil, but there are a lot of people who are very enthusiastic, who think there's going to be a big turnout, or if not a big turnout, at least a persistent turnout. And that can often be more important than just, getting a bunch of people. I know we had 6,000 people marching against the Iraqi war in 2003 here in Santa Cruz. And a month later, there was nobody, even though the war had begun. And it's really kind of depressing. That doesn't really, the numbers sometimes don't matter. It is the determination. On the other hand, a year and a half ago, we watched massive crowds building and overthrow governments in Tunisia and Egypt. So it can be done. It has been done. And it started here last fall, and who knows what's going to start this fall. Can't really tell. Tomorrow at 7 is this activity that I encourage you to come to. Bring a candle, or just bring yourself, bring a sign.
Bring a tent if you have one.
Bring a video camera. Bring a tent is good. What else should people bring? A sleeping bag? I don't know.
Might get cold.
Yeah, it might get cold. Might bring a blanket. I don't know. Maybe we'll have a couple of fire barrels to warm ourselves with.
I don't think so.
Nah, probably not. This is New York City, and it probably isn't going to get that cold. And that would be frowned upon, if not doused, by the fire department. I'm going to play some interviews now, and I'm also going to encourage you, Freedom, to say, whoa, I wanted to comment on that, because these are going to be interviews from the street. And if you've had some other... from recent experiences that bear on this, or they remind you of things that are important, tell me.
Okay. I think I'd like to say one more thing concerning the homeless population and recent activities with the sweeps going on the last 7 weeks. Basically, I've been thinking a lot recently and realizing the parallels between Nazi Germany and the Santa Cruz Police Department, and it's really disheartening because you can compare the German parliament burning the Reichstag down being followed by the Enabling Act in Germany, and then there was the Holocaust. I've been drawing the parallels between that and the false flag attack 9/11 here in the United States, which led to the Privacy Act, which is very closely related to the Enabling Act in Germany. And then after the Privacy Act here was the National Defense Authorization Act, easily comparable to the Holocaust. FEMA has announced their readiness to house people in case of an emergency. What that entails is up to the government. And after people have repeatedly been swept and thrown in jail and just treated like rats, or just completely dehumanized, just like the Jews in the Holocaust, this is just, it's really upsetting. And it's happening right now, and we need to come together in solidarity to stop this, prevent it from happening. Otherwise, there's going to be not just a revolution, but there's going to be a lot of people in working camps and death camps. And I'm ready for that, if that's what it comes to, because it needs to be done. And I would really, really appreciate a lot of people who support the people to come out tomorrow to this tent vigil, because we are all humans, and especially now in this time of economic crisis, we need to support each other. We need to come together and provide food for each other, provide information, how to garden, how to take care of each other medically, and we need to be a community again. We can't just be entirely autonomous at all times and expect our country or ourselves to thrive.
So here we have the not the contradiction, but perhaps the proviso that you're a supporter of autonomy, but on the other hand, you're a recognizer of the need for community.
Mm-hmm.
Both.
You can have both, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, I kind of wanted to just, like you requested,
a song,
maybe.
A song. Without
a
song,
of it.
The day would never end. Go ahead.
Okay, so this will be my last wrap up, and I'm just going to do the first stanza here, and then if you would really like to hear the rest of it, I'll be at Sabrosa tonight at 8 p.m., which is probably in, I don't know, 40 minutes or
45
so?
Minutes, yeah.
Okay. All right, here we go. This is called The Secret War. It's by my friend Thomas from Southern California. And it was written before Occupy started. Banks get bailouts, families get kicked out, children with their hands out, the secret war. New face, no stammer, house servant, world planner, lord of the manor, the secret war. We get puppets, not profits, false hope in our pockets, moonlight from the sockets, the secret war.
You want to sing a little more, perhaps?
You didn't know you were a pawn. Feudal serfs all along. Another headstone for the lawn. The secret war.
If you want to hear the rest, you got to go and hang out at the Sub Rosa. If you show up there in the next 15 minutes, you can start signing up for the sign-up list to do your own poetry and songs. That's at 7:03 Pacific. And if you show up at 8 or a little bit thereafter, you can pull up a chair and get a cup of coffee and kick down a little money. Cheap coffee there.
Dollar for the coffee.
Dollar for the coffee.
Or tea.
Yeah.
Or paletas.
You know, I wish I had some more there's more recent stuff than Hitler and the Enabling Act, than there's George Bush and the Patriot Act, for one thing.
Well, then there's the Red Scare.
And there's
and the Japanese internment camps. And
right, but I'm thinking of foreign countries that are more recently dictatorshiped, which you can look at England and what's going on in England and the restrictions that are happening there. But if you go to well, almost any search engine will take you to articles on 1933 and the dissolution of, well, it wasn't democracy anyway in Germany, but it was a parliamentary system And what it reads like is this, for those who don't remember. On the first day, actually none of us remember here, we're all too young. On the first day, January 30th, 1933, as Chancellor of Germany, and that was an elected office. Adolf Hitler was elected and then appointed by President Hindenburg to that position. Convinced German President Paul von Hindenburg that the Reichstag parliament must be dissolved. New elections were scheduled. That's how you do it in these parliamentary countries. You dissolve the parliament and throw a new election for March 5th. Meanwhile, Hitler continued meeting with industrialists and military leaders to discuss plans to rebuild Germany's military might. Krupp and IG Farben, in particular, donated millions of marks to the Nazi Party for the new elections. On the night of February 27th, a week before the elections, the Reichstag building, which is the parliament in Germany at that time, was set on fire. At the urging of Hitler, Hindenburg responded the next day by issuing an emergency decree for the protection of the people in the state, which stated that restrictions on personal liberty, on the right of free expression, freedom of the press, rights of assembly and association, and violations of the privacy of the postal, telegraphic, and telephonic communications, and warrants for house searches, orders for confiscations, as well as restrictions on property, are also permissible beyond the legal limits otherwise prescribed. Nazis immediately used this decree to intensify their attacks on their political opponents, especially the communists, although the Nazi Party, not to say that the communists wouldn't have done the same thing, but although the Nazi Party failed to win a majority in the March 5th elections, Hitler was able to push through the Enabling Act, officially law for removing the distress of the people and the Reich. On March 21st, with 441 votes for and 84 against, the Social Democrats voted against it, the act officially recognized Hitler as Germany's dictator and abolished what they call democracy there. I never liked that really word in this situation. So, yeah, that's one relatively probably accurate account. It's from the Encyclopedia Britannica blog, for those of you who like to follow such things. And as I said, I think it's important for us. We all go back to Germany many, 60, 70, 80 years ago. And I think it's important to, look at more recent countries, and I hope that I can bring those examples up, which don't sound so cliche. Nazis, they're a Nazi. Yeah, right. Thank you very much. It's some of the people have said it's a way of losing an argument. The minute you have to call someone a Nazi, you're kind of stuck, You're a Nazi! Yeah, okay, thank you. People, as they say, tend to dismiss that as a cliche and as sort of you're jacketing someone instead of actually, whereas if you said, you kind of remind me of Indonesia under Sukarno. Or gee, you're kind of a Pinochet guy from Chile. You seem like to me that people might say, oh, what's that? And you say, well, he had a great team. He had this guy's arms cut off, was trying to play the guitar in the arena, and what's his name? Victor Jara, I think his name was. Anyway, I'm going to play some local stuff. All this chatter. And maybe before you leave, you may have a few thoughts on this, Freedom, if you're still here and you haven't fallen asleep. If anybody wants to comment or question or get involved by going on the air, please give a call, 427-3772. Let's hear some street interviews while we still have a little time left.
So here we are at just a snip and a puppy dog's tail away from the Occupy Santa Cruz on Sunday the 26th. And it's about 2:30. I've been handed a folded yellow ticket by a man who wishes to be known as...
Raven.
Raven.
Is my name.
And Raven, what is this ticket about? I'm unfolding it. You can hear the crackle.
I was driving downtown the other night with my headlight on my bike working.
Right.
Apparently, it's got a little short or something in it, but it wasn't bright enough. I crossed the street. The cop pulled me over and gave me a ticket for riding without a headlight. I said, the headlight's on. And I looked, and I couldn't really see it until then. I looked, and it was on. So I said, dude, the headlight's on. And he goes, it's not bright enough. I'm giving you a ticket for it. And he ran my bike, and he left, man.
Who was the cop,
I don't know. He's a rookie down here now. He runs at nighttime all the time.
Looks like two different code sections. He's got a phone call. Thank you, Raven.
We're talking to a man who's getting a suntan here, right outside the Red Church. He's reluctant to say anything, but he did tell me, he did have two words regarding my question, what's going on the streets? Today's August 27th, it's around 5:20 here. And we're at the Red Church where people are inside listening to a service and eventually getting fed. Can you repeat that for us, sir?
It's worse, but I had a good day today.
When you say it's worse, are you remembering specific experiences you've seen, or...?
It's different. It's a lot different than 20 years ago when everything was different. I mean, they didn't have all these people with garbage cans to bother you and people dressed in serious, weird uniforms that have 20 cops at their disposal within 10 seconds, and et cetera.
Fast reaction time. Have you noticed anything in the last week particularly that you want to comment on?
No, not really.
But you have the general impression things are things worse than they were a year ago.
For me, sure, yeah.
and why would you say that's the case?
Well, I'm poor.
But you were poor a year ago.
Yeah, but I'm even more poor now. I'm abused.
And what kind of abuse have you suffered recently?
I can't.
It's a secret to...
Yeah, well, it's part of my job.
To be abused?
Yes, sir. Yeah, I got it. Otherwise, I won't have a good life at all. I won't be able to go home and listen to records and play my guitar.
You do have a home to go to?
No. I just have a couch, you know, sometimes.
A couch sometimes.
I'm thrown out on a regular basis. And there's never any parking, et cetera.
So there are many concerns you have. We do wish to sign in and say exactly who you are.
Oh, sure. I'm Richard Allen Kemp, born on the 4th of July, 57.
Thank you, Richard. White tape recorder. We're talking with
Wyatt Earp.
And Wyatt, you're bringing your traveling suitcase with you, kind of roll-along suitcase. You have a cup of coffee in your hand outside the Red Church. And you hail from Eureka recently?
Yes, I'm just coming out of the Ponderosa fire right now.
And how long were you up there?
I was up in Eureka for 4 years.
And you were houseless up there?
Yes.
And I know that I did a lot of coverage of Eureka back during the South Spit Jetty days, like, you know,
yep.
15, 12 years.
Bus. Yeah.
When there was this large encampment that they destroyed with a phony health scare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was there.
You were at the South Spit Jetty?
I was at that little protest, yeah.
And then you left Eureka for a time and then came back?
No, I actually went over to Redding and then I've been mostly Northern California right now.
And so what's the situation in Eureka compared with, say, a decade ago or 2 decades ago? Are things better, worse, the same?
Right now what's going on in Eureka is everything's been consolidated to one agency, which I don't think is a good idea because there's a lot of room for abuse right there.
Too many, in terms of homeless services?
Yeah, just too many people's hands in the pot and the money's not really going where it's supposed to.
Do you sleep indoors up there or are you outside on the streets?
I'm on the streets.
And do you get ticketed?
Yeah, all the time.
For what kind of offense?
Basically, it's loitering right now. If it's after 9 o'clock at night, then they go with the camping. But during the day, it's basically to move people on.
And has anybody challenged that? Have been any court cases?
They've challenged it only to find out that they've been found guilty and that they had to either do a massive amount of probation, which they weren't willing to do, or just sign a paper stating that they'll stay away from the area that they loitered in.
And have you had to do this?
I have.
What areas have you been banned from?
I've been banned from Mad River County Park. I've been banned from the square in downtown Arcata. And if I am seen at Clam Beach, I will go to jail. I will not be ticketed.
So what kind of behaviors have you exhibited at these three areas that supposedly justifies banning you?
Oh, I don't know if there's a justify because everybody's got to sleep. I think.
So you were criminally sleeping at these areas?
Yes, I was. I was sleeping.
You were caught with a pillow.
I was caught with a sleeping bag in a sleeping bag. In Northern California, if you throw a sheet, blanket, anything over you, that constitutes urban camping.
Now, have you been up to Arcata at all?
Yes.
And how's the situation up there?
Arcata is really bad right now for the simple fact that all the services are basically closed. They closed the St. Vincent de Paul. The food bank has moved from the Presbyterian Church over to the Nazarene Church over by HSU. That's every Saturday. There is a
Humboldt State University.
Yes, HSU. There is let me see, one shelter in town, but basically if you're not in with the in crowd, you're not going to get in.
How many spaces are there in the shelter?
10.
And how many people would you estimate in Arcata or outside?
I'm not going to exaggerate, and I'm going to leave it at 300.
And have you, spent more time up there or in Eureka?
Basically both places, Humboldt County in general.
Is HSU, Humboldt State University, sympathetic to homeless people?
Right now they're doing some outreach programs which involve the food bank. They were really instrumental in moving the food bank from the downtown site, which got to be really bad. It was a neighborly issue. Where it's situated now, it's more in a residential area and out of the way from the merchants.
So what was it, located more centrally in the town square, and that upset the merchants?
Or? Pretty much, because what would happen is they would partake of their goodies that they got from the food bank, and the garbage would end up a trail, like a Hansel and Gretel trail, away from the food bank.
Isn't there a littering law that allowed the authorities to ticket people for that if they want?
They would rather ticket you on the fact that you are in a place too long. That way they can displace you.
And what do people do with these tickets? Are they jailable tickets? Are they infractions? Are they punishable by fines? What's the story?
I've never really known anybody to write a ticket out. I mean, they basically say they're homeless and they use them for toilet paper. I would.
Are warrants issued then to arrest the people or not?
Probably a bench warrant will be issued for the failure to appear.
You've written tickets. Yeah. Did you go to court?
I did go to court.
How many tickets have you been issued in the last 4 years?
4 years. Under 10.
And have you gone to court on every one of those?
I have not gone to court on every one of them.
And have you been pursued for arrest warrants for any of them?
I have one outstanding warrant right now out of San Diego County, which is a misdemeanor, and it's for a shopping cart.
And what about up Eureka way? Have you gotten any outstanding warrants?
Eureka, I think my court dates start hitting in November, so I don't know.
You've got 10 citations. Are they all passed?
They were dismissed, or I either just pled guilty and they were just...
So you did go to court on all of them?
Yeah, pretty much. 7 of them. Yeah.
And did you go to court by meeting the court date or by getting taken in by the cops?
Taken in by the cops for the failure.
There was an arrest warrant.
Yeah, a failure to appear.
And so then you were given a sentence of stay-away orders and what else?
Stay-away orders and probation.
And so you're on probation. They must be misdemeanors, huh?
They're misdemeanors. Yeah, they're just infractions, county code or city codes, actually.
So you're here in Santa Cruz. Were you? When was the last time you were here?
Last time I was in Santa Cruz, let me see, was probably 95.
And how long have you been here this time?
I'm just passing through right now, less than 24 hours.
Any passing impressions compared with 95?
I like what they did with the Coral Street shelter, where they modified it and upgraded it. Last time I was here, there was a taco vending cart. That's what they were eating out of. They were serving out of that.
That was the free meal.
Yeah. There was a tent city set up in the back, which was really off the hook. That's gone. The Page.
Coral Street Open Air Shelter.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where the Page Center is now.
Page Smith Community House.
Yeah. And I don't know. I haven't been here long enough to dabble into the services or what the agencies are doing. I have noticed that there is a lot of people out here, so there's got to be a bump in the road somewhere.
Have you known an activist named Tad up in Arcata?
No, I do not.
He actually does he writes online, and he's been arrested for camping, and he's fought camping tickets with an attorney named Tracy Heron or Tracy Rain. Any attorneys volunteer to help people up there?
There's a David Goldberg, but basically what it is if it's went to warrant already, he will step in. If it's pending, you're pretty much at the mercy of the court.
So where are you headed, and what's next on your itinerary?
Well, I just lost everything in the fire, the Ponderosa fire, so I'm heading down to San Diego right now. I know people down there, and I don't know, put my life back together.
We've been talking with
Wyatt Earp.
Thank you, Wyatt.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Good luck to you on your travels. And
thank you. Thank you, Robert.
You're also mentioning, Wyatt, that the Endeavor, the homeless service up there, used to be extremely selective and discriminated by giving those who were old-timers large quantities of food and those who were newcomers less.
Yes, yes. What it is if you were a familiar face there, you actually receive services. To basically show your need for services, you would have to prove to them by coming back.
And that's no longer the case with the new organization, or still the same?
Right now, there is no organization. It's been disbanded. Arcata House runs their little 10-bed shelter. But as far as a feeding program, Arcata Night Shelter, I think, is trying to start a food cart wagon to go around and feed people, but they're hitting really bumps in the road with the city on the permits and everything.
And how's the employment situation? Are there jobs or people who want them?
There are no jobs in Eureka right now.
Arcata?
Arcata, nothing. You might get a day labor job once or twice, and that would be, you know, working on someone's yard, a college student, help move, something like that. But as far as steady, gainful employment, no, there is none.
Thanks, Wyatt.
Thank you.
What should we remember about you? We're talking with a woman who's...
Before we talk to this next guest, do you have any comments on any of this stuff?
What the fuck?
Can you elucidate for us, Freedom, exactly what you mean by the use of these obscene expletives on the radio?
This is expletive-worthy material, is all I have to say. People should not be treated like this at all, and this is bullshit that it's happening on a daily basis and impacting people's lives to this extent. It's uncalled for. It's obscene. How the fuck are we treated like this? Like animals, like profit. We are pure profit. All we are is a machine to obtain capital for the state. And just this is so fucked up. How is it that we have to pay, what, $600 a month for rent around here to exist? To simply have a roof or someplace over our heads when this is a time when there's more open buildings than there are homeless people.
Vacant buildings are
yes,
the crime,
yes.
perhaps?
Yes, vacant buildings are indeed the crime. And this is just nuts. It absolutely blows my mind that it could be happening, and people can pay into a type of system where they're paying to exist and working so hard. I know how hard people work. I did it for a little while, and then I had to work different ways. And it's sad that people are getting treated so poorly, and not even just that, but are being attacked. Because it's a hard life on the street, getting sick and going hungry and getting cold. 4 people died of hypothermia in Santa Cruz last year over the winter. We've seen a wide variety of problems people have had over at Occupy, and that's because people have problems. And if we can unite in solidarity, then we can address those issues and solve them and work together and create a peaceful world and not have to live in fear of our neighbors. That's a shame that that's happening. This is all... It's just so sad. It's sad. It's upsetting to see people's lives being wasted, working 9-to-5s every day, working so hard. All their time is going into what? What's it for? Why do you have to pay this? This is stolen land from the Ohlones, specifically in this area, the Bay Area of California. This land never belonged to anybody. You cannot own the land. The earth owns itself. You can't control everything. You can't control nature. People are animals. We are natural beings. We should have the right to be free and to live how we'd like to.
Shall we hear more?
Yeah, I'd like to listen to more.
Thank you, Freedom.
Thank you.
Actually, you've been out really struggling with a number of physical conditions. You were at Peace Camp 2010. We talked about a year ago at the, many months ago at the Operation, what's it called? You were at the Occupy 2. You were also at the Project Connect.
I've been keeping up with all these years.
And we're talking to Diana herself.
Yes. Diane P. Gordon, yes.
And, you know, you've been to the, when was the last time you went to the hospital?
This last month I was in for 5 days.
And the kind of conditions you have are what?
I had pneumonia from being outside, and I have congestive heart failure. I have asthma, COPD, emphysema, and I have a kidney removal and a gallbladder removal, and I've had a hysterectomy family, and I've had bleed outs, and I keep getting pulmonary. I keep getting blood clots in my lungs. So.
This doesn't sound like fun, Diana.
Not fun. Scary. I'm 58. I turned 58 this month.
And I know that you... How many evenings in the last week have you had shelter indoors?
Well, thanks to this place.
Red Church.
Yeah, four days a week. And then the other 3 days I sleep outside. That's how I get pneumonia.
And have you gotten tickets for sleeping outside?
Not recently.
Yeah, because the police are being nice to you, or because you're just much better at hiding? Or
I'm doing much better hiding. And
you
they,
camouflage yourself?
Yes, I do. And I I go to sleep real late and I get up real early. I be as thoughtful as I can, and I think the police they sort of feel bad now because they know that I keep going to the hospital, and they've been nice to me actually.
Did the police actually come by, seen you, and then just walked away?
Well, they told me if they want to know where I am, because they don't want me dying. They want to make sure that I'm okay. Several of them have been very good.
They don't
want
to give you a ticket for being.
They don't want to. There's a few that will give them to me every time they see me, and they've given them to other people. I mean, to me and not other people. They don't realize I don't walk good. So the people that are standing up, they don't get tickets that I'm sitting down and I get them. I would like for them not to give me tickets because I can't walk good.
Me too. I'll buy that. So, the reason I began recording, because you were very tired, you didn't feel like talking today, but you asked me, you said you may not be around much longer, and you wondered if I would mention you if you died. And so I suggested you might want to say, what is it about you that you would like me to say? What should we know about your life?
I've tried every day for the last decade to get housing that I can afford and to just to be okay. To stay out of trouble, not be a criminal. It's important. I don't want to be ashamed of my life. And I am a health rights activist and a human rights activist, and I keep up track with everybody, and I make sure that people are okay. They know where the water fountains and where blankets are. I do everything I can to refer people to good places. I care about people. And I'm afraid some of the things that I found out and stuff is so like if you cook the beans an hour longer, your belly's gonna be better. There's so many basic things that we could do, topical things that we could all be. There's a lot of things that we could do for things to be all right. I've served a lot of food up and down the entire coast. I mean, I believe people should. And if people, I used to have a Rottweiler for 12 years. I go around and I check people. I make sure nobody's hurting each other. And I make sure people go to clinics if they have staff or if they don't know about the needle places where needle drop off. I carry all kinds of condoms and stuff and talk to people about AIDS all the time. It's very important. Just letting people know how to stay alive. It's very important. I make sure people have jackets and just where they can get them if they don't have them. I'll pick them up if they're not able to. But I do care about people. I truly do. It would be nice if people could see how all the wonderful people there are that nobody even knows that they're wonderful. Just like they, if you get to say hi, hello in there, and then you find out they're magnificent. Yeah, I know.
So that's what you'd like people to know about you before you die, preferably, and if necessary, after you die.
Yes. I'm doing writing and putting it to music. I'm going to get it to you, hopefully, before I do that. I'm real proud of how it's coming out. So I would like to pass some of my work to you before I do go.
you ever use the internet, or you have a website, or a Facebook, a MySpace, Twitter?
I just do everything in person. Yeah. Everything in person. But I think I'm going to here soon.
We've been talking with
Diane Patricia Gordon.
Thank you, Diane. We're talking to a man who I've sometimes seen as really in bad shape. I mean, I've seen ambulances called on you and all kinds of shit. We're talking with
John Valley.
John, how's it been going in the last week or two?
Got hit by a car a week ago Thursday. A county vehicle put me in a coma for a hospital for 3 days, 3 nights, 4 days, CAT scan and all that. Nothing broken, just a bunch of torn muscles and stuff, but getting by with life, I guess.
Maybe you give the illusion of being healthier than you are.
Oh, yeah, I'm terminally inoperable, but I do Chinese traditional medicine and American medicine, and it helps. And self-medicating between the three seems to work. 65, and I'm still getting around.
Are you outside?
By choice, yeah. I like the fresh air.
And have you been persecuted, hassled, or otherwise cited?
Today I got a ticket for being in a closed area and possession of a shopping cart.
So what closed area? Was this some sort of closet you were hiding in?
No, I think it was over by the levee or something. After hours, I guess, certain along the walkway or the pathway or something.
What time was it when you got the ticket?
10:30 in the morning.
And I want to interrupt this to say that there have recently been signs posted along the levee expanding the forbidden zones, as I call them, the areas you're not allowed to go. The allegation for this is that they're reforesting the area. And I haven't examined all of it, but the idea that every single area along the levee is suddenly being reforested, it's always possible, but I remember the same excuses have been used, for example, to drive away homeless people from the Drum Circle area across from CVS. This was about a year before you came, Freedom, where the Drum Circle had been driven away from the farmer's market, and you can find all these old stories on Indy Bay and how we successfully resisted that for a year. Police tried to break it up, and we kept reassembling there, and it was really, really impressive the community did that. But eventually driven away, and then driven away, they were at this lot on Soquel, right across from CVS, which is where there would be some trees and some bush. And it was where the Peace Camp 2010 was actually planned. And there were 50 to 100 people would come for the Drum Circle, and people would come and serve food and so forth, food, not bombs. And what they did was they cut down all the trees, they destroyed all the bushes, and they put up a triangle of yellow tape that said, "Do not cross," and they put a little sign, "Reforested area." Well, if you go by CBS right before you get to the Soquel Bridge on the right, you'll see the reforested area. It's been reforested with dirt. So I guess they're hoping for future fertile soil. Any thoughts about anything you've heard so far?
Oh, thanks for having my mic off. Jeez.
No, I want to make sure you get a chance to say something.
Thank you.
I'm the main speaker here. Let's keep that
in mind. Yeah, obviously. Well, it seems to be that way anywhere you are, right?
Blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah, blah. Anyways, okay, that's enough poking fun at you. I really liked Diane, right? Her interview, I thought that was really...
Diane Gordon's self-described obituary, what she would like said about her, what she'd like people to know after she dies. And perhaps before she dies, as I said.
Mm-hmm. That was really touching to me. And it got me thinking a lot, and I definitely resonate with, just wanting the community to... maybe not recognize magnificent in certain individuals or people, but not necessarily outcast or put judgment on anyone. Because it's so hard on someone's soul after a long time. And I mean, it was a depressing interview, but it was good. It was really good to hear. And,
okay. You're doing a fine job. You're not required to say anything, but to get reactions, feel free to say them. This last interview we're listening to is a guy called John Valley, who was he was with the Peace Camp 2010, the protest went on for 3 months at the county building, and for which numerous people have gone to jail, but currently Gary Johnson is in jail, write him in jail if you can. If you ever want his information about it, write Gary. Call me at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And that's just, I mean, I'm Gary's going to be remembered, I hope, at tomorrow's vigil at 7 o'clock when we take off. We go to the City Hall at 809 Center Street. That's across from the main library, in case you're unfamiliar with City Hall, since it's such a useless enterprise or institution. And then we're going to go to different spots. I understand the police department, perhaps places downtown as well.
You know, I'm not entirely sure if it's going to be going to the police department. I think there's still some kind of up and down about that.
Talk about two different marches or something.
I don't know. There might be a decision-making process at the actual gathering with the people involved, so that way it can be more concise for what's actually happening, who wants to do what, and we can all possibly be a voting body, like when
democracy.
Regular, yeah, democracy.
Consensus? What
consensus
are you talking
process,
about?
Yeah.
I've heard about that before somewhere.
It's all the new rage against the machine.
Well, I know that there is. It looks like you're looking anxiously at the clock. Please take off if you need to, Freedom. I got to hang in for another 12 minutes here until Uncle Dennis comes pounding at the door. And I also want to play as much of this tape as I can. I'll play a little more, and but I understand you had to get going. You were actually doubtful you could come in initially because you had this previous song poetry activity. You're going to be the poem you're putting to music yourself fundamentally.
No, it's. Originally a song.
Oh, it is. Mm-hmm. It was originally a song.
Yeah.
And this is of your own composition, perhaps?
No, my friend wrote it.
And
performed it.
Name of the author?
Thomas Monroe from Southern California.
And the shout out to old Thomas. And Thomas used to know you under another name. What name was that?
He knows me by Freedom.
All right, fair enough. Should we not expose your prior identity? Is that?
There's no reason to.
Fair enough. We're keeping that on the QT, folks. So here's a little more from John Valley.
All right, I'm going to say my goodbyes then to the listeners out there. Maybe see you at Sabrosa.
7:03 Pacific, and goes on for the next couple hours.
All right, well, it's been a pleasure, Robert. Thank you for having me, and thank you for listening, everyone.
Thank you, man. It's back to the interviews, and let's hear them.
After hours, 10:30
in
the morning?
In the morning, yeah. So it's not supposed to be there. In
usual hours.
Yeah.
You get that upside down a little bit. But,
No, I got one.
8:30, don't they?
Yeah, the pathway, but not the area on the side of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is the inside always closed, or only are there hours for it?
There are certain hours, and the walkway is closed from sunset to sunrise, or 8 to 8 or something.
What were you doing, lurking off the pathway?
Just sitting there smoking a cigarette, getting out of the way.
We were both smoking. Smoking and sitting and in a forbidden zone.
And lurking.
Closed area.
Well, 65, I might say.
Yeah. Sure. And mobility impaired, visually impaired, all of the above. It's just taking a break.
And what did the... Who gave you a ticket?
Mike Canoy.
What department?
Santa Cruz City Police Department.
What was his comment as he whipped out his ticket book?
I got another one for you. It's signed right here.
He's pulling out a yellow document of some kind.
Yeah, it's a ticket. Another ticket.
And what does this ticket say?
This one's for the shopping cart.
And
we're in possession of shopping cart. But let's see.
The shopping cart, your shopping cart?
No, it was New Leaf. I was bringing it there. I found it. His badge number is 128 HUYNH.
I know that guy. Officer Hanya, I believe. And did he have any other comments about his vigilant concern about New Leaf?
Ha ha. He just said, basically, I just wanted to list ha ha. And I said, yeah, Judge Stevens will really like it when I go to court on the 5th and show a definite profile and with a bunch of other people for harassment.
Now, you are intending to go on September 5th to court?
Yeah, I have to. I got a court date.
And what is your charge?
A bunch of loitering, I don't know, a bunch of...
You want people to attend your court date?
Oh, no, I already got a class action going on. I filed it in Santa Rosa and then in Sacramento court.
What time is this court date?
8:15 on the 5th in courtroom 2.
So you don't mind if people show up?
No, not at all. And I've been helping other people get the documents from the law library and file their own lawsuits of whatever problems they have. And beat them at their own game.
You notice much of a crackdown, John, the last few weeks?
Yeah, they've got the countywide, each Watsonville, Capitola, Aptos, Scotts Valley, each jurisdiction has a countywide camping ban. So anybody that's set up in a campsite or whatever, they're removing all their property and citing people for camping.
Are they storing people's property or destroying?
No, destroying it.
And how do you know that?
Because I've lost three sets of stuff already.
And give me the last
chair with oxygen attached, sleeping bags, backpack. I know a bunch of people have lost their stuff from their campsites.
Last time this property theft happened to you?
I keep losing it.
Last time was a week ago, 2 weeks ago?
Today's Monday, probably Thursday.
And what was taken?
A wheelchair with an oxygen tank, backpack, jacket, sleeping stuff.
Who was the officer who did that?
I don't know. I was in. I was unconscious from an automobile accident.
Now, do you know that this wasn't stored at the police station in this way?
Yeah, because I checked. Because it was Thursday. And Thursday afternoon, you only get like Tuesday and Thursday an hour each day to get your stuff. And it wasn't there.
What did the
police don't know what happened to it, and the fire department and the paramedics didn't know what happened to it because I went to the hospital.
Has this happened to you before with your car?
Oh, yeah, everybody loses their stuff.
So in other words, the Santa Cruz Police Department is not too fastidious about taking people's property to store it?
No, they throw it away, basically.
And had this happened to you before, specifically you, a property you had in a prior occasion?
Yeah.
Do you remember any specifics about that?
They don't have room for it in a paramedic ambulance or in a police car, and you know somebody's supposed to store it or keep an eye on it, and they never do. It's always gone.
But do you remember what that property was on those other occasions?
Oh, yeah, life-threatening medication or wallets or jackets or wheelchairs or mobility equipment. Whatever, they just confiscated and it's gone. It's that simple.
You yourself are a vet?
Yep. That's not service connected, disabled.
And have you gotten much help from the vets department around here?
Yeah, kind of. I'm eligible for their housing, but the ones that are available, I got a COPD and emphysema, and I can't breathe in them, so I haven't accepted their housing yet. But I've got the voucher for it for vets, and then as a convicted felon or whatever, 109AB or something, and then Section 8 or low income. But I haven't found a suitable housing yet, and I got a place to live, but nobody there with me, so I don't go home very often.
It's an indoor place to live.
Yeah.
What's your sense about how other people are being treated around here, John, or housing?
Ask them. Everybody's getting harassed.
Thanks for giving me the update. I will move on and talk
to you. Okay, thanks, Bob.
Thank you, John. We're talking with...
You are a lawyer?
No. I'm just a sort of a radio guy who is concerned about civil rights for people in Santa Cruz.
So you don't know. Okay, let me tell you something. Yeah. Okay. A few months ago, I live in SoCal in mobile home, just past 41st Avenue, SoCal Drive. And my boyfriend was living with me, and he'd been hassling me, and I wanted him to leave. Anyway, bottom line. I was packing up stuff and I was in the process. I had a paper bag in front of me, and there was just one magazine in it. My boyfriend was on the couch, sitting on the couch, and he said something smart-ass, and I just quickly and automatically picked up the paper bag and tossed it in that direction. I did not mean to hit him. I have no violence whatsoever on my record. Okay. He called the police, the sheriff, and the sheriff showed up and wrote me a ticket for domestic violence.
Now, we used to say, how tall are you?
I'm 5'2 and a half.
And how much do you weigh?
110.
Now, you have a record of murder, rape, and violence, of course.
The only thing I've ever had on my police record from the get-go, from age zero, is soliciting.
Okay.
And camping tickets in San Diego. I never got a camping ticket.
You don't regard yourself as a violent person?
I'm not a violent person whatsoever. Not towards another person.
Now you hit me if I asked you to.
Yeah.
Well, you won't get into that. So you have a citation. You have to show up in court.
I have not showed up in court. I called the court because it had been over the time for the court date. Okay. I went there beforehand. Okay. to check in, okay,
right.
And they said that it wasn't in their computer. Okay. I went there a second time, and they said they still didn't have a record of it.
Right.
I went there a third time after the court date.
Right.
Okay, they didn't have a record of it.
The difference between the, what was the interval between the second and the third time?
You know, I'm the mental health patient.
You don't remember that.
And I don't remember. But it was all pertinent to the dates of the time. I was extremely, extremely upset and stressed over this. Because I'd met the man one other time,
right.
A few weeks before that, a month maybe. David, the man that was living in my house, wouldn't leave, and he went up and touched me, okay, and I called the sheriff, okay,
right.
Because there are times when he has violence in his eyes, and I don't play it anyway, and I called the sheriff, and the same sheriff showed up the very first time and was very polite and very nice. And
did he write a ticket for your person who touched you?
No.
Did he tell the guy to leave?
Yes, he did tell him to leave.
Okay.
Yeah. But, I told the sheriff the truth. Okay. He just slapped me on the butt. Okay.
Right.
And I said, you know, between 1 and 10, how hard? And I said, a half of 1. Okay. I was totally honest with him. I just wanted the man out.
Right. Right.
Okay.
Well, he's got no right to touch you if you don't want to be touched. I mean, you know, it's as simple as that.
No right. Just,
nor do I want to be in your house if you don't want him in your house.
No,
I mean, that's
right. Absolutely. And so, but then the second time, and he was, like I said, he was very polite, et cetera, et cetera. And maybe he thought I overreacted because I told him that it was just a slight flap. I don't have any idea, but the second time he showed up, when David called him, he wrote me a ticket for domestic violence.
So the first time was the slap on the butt, the second time was the situation.
He hit me.
Yeah.
He just slapped.
Right, with a slap on the butt, yeah.
But like I said, he has violence in him.
So
and it shows through
what you have. Is there a warrant for your arrest? You know what's happening with that ticket?
I have no idea. I have not heard from them.
You went back to court to find out, and you found you missed the court.
It wasn't on the record. No, I didn't miss the court date.
Right. So,
no.
So therefore, there's nothing on the record yet.
I have no idea what's really going on.
It's a mystery.
I would like to know, and I tried my best to find out.
Well, you know what? You should talk with Steve Plaich. You know Steve or not? Steve is a homeless legal person's assistance project guy. He's here. He's a tall guy with the silver hair. He's usually serving bagels. And his phone number, for those who are listening, is 466-6078. I can introduce you to him if you want.
Okay.
Well, let's see. We're talking with...
Sea Otter.
And Sea Otter, you say you're an old-time Santa Cruz guy?
Born and raised here in Santa Cruz.
How long you been outside?
38 years.
And so have you actually been camping out every night?
Yes.
And do you hide well, or are you simply invisible?
I'm pretty much invisible. The police can't figure me out because what I have in my backpack is oceanography stuff. And
you think you're some kind of a weird student, Bert.
Right, right.
But the weird student interview must wait until Sunday when I'll be coming back at 9:30 in the morning.
Maybe.
Probably. Why? We got something planned here, Dennis?
You never know, Robert.
Dennis is making his usual ominous commentary, which he'll be making aplenty for the next 3 hours. You'll be able to hear from the cream to the dregs. That's what's coming up.
Just be careful out there, bud.
There you go. So
his buses go up and down the street.
He's got cautions for everyone. I will also be at the vigil tomorrow night. I encourage you to come on down. Seven.
You're asleep, are you? Right?
It's quite possible. That would, of course, be a criminal violation of who knows what, and I could have to... pay the penalty for that kind of activity. Hopefully I'm not conspiring to
go
do
right
so.
Go right to sleep, though.
I could go right to sleep for the right to sleep. Who knows? Anyway, the issue here is going to be
you have no rights.
A candlelight vigil around Santa Cruz starting at 7 o'clock after
I didn't get the idea you had any rights at all.
A hearty meal. And in the studio with you, Dennis, it's hard to say anything, much less assert one's rights. But then again, we are
have no rights.
1 minute into your show, so I suppose rather than lock you out, as I've done in the past, on one occasion, I will have to submit to your tyrannous authority and be on my way. But again,
just
tomorrow,
leave.
7 o'clock, come to the vigil, City Hall. Bring a candle if you got one. Bring yourself. Bring a friend. Bring some warm clothing. We're going to be doing a walk.
Careful with those candles. They might be considered an incendiary device.
That's going to be an incendiary march in more ways than one. You never can tell. So that's not an invitation to arson necessarily, folks. It is more an invitation to...
You are going to burn the candles, right?
Yes, we will.
That is arson.
And it also is a form of smoking ban violations because it does put a certain smoke into the air. We won't get into that. Anyway, you can reach me between now and then and now and Sunday at 423-4833. These shows are archived at huffsantacruz.org. H-U-F-F Santa Cruz, one word, small letters,
.org. Why anyone would love to listen to them again?
I reluctantly turn you over to Uncle Dennis, who will, he'll do what he'll do.